Okay, page 198, we're going to start at the beginning of Vayeshev. Last time we gave more of an introduction to the story of Vayeshev, so now we'll get into the actual psukim. Before we begin, Rashi says that in the previous parsha, at the end of the parsha, it enumerated the eight kings of Edom. And Rashi says that there was, it's very brief. The Torah is not elaborating on it. When it comes to Yaakov and Yosef and all that, so because they're precious, so then the Torah starts elaborating on it. And Rashi says the same thing we find, the 10 generations from Adam to Noach, the Torah just basically runs through. Noach was a tzaddik, so the Torah elaborates on Noach. From Noach to Avram, again, the Torah goes through Bekitzer very briefly. When it comes to Avram, the Torah starts enumerating and elaborating on it. And he says, it's a mashal of, Rashi gives a mashal of a person that lost a pearl in the sand. And he quickly goes through the sand, the junk, and then he finally finds the pearl. So the same thing, Hashem went through all the generations quickly until he came to the pearl, which was Noach and Avram, and in this case, Yosef and Yaakov. There's another old text of Rashi. Rashi, in our prints, it's here. The Rashi says an example of a camel, of a flax dealer, of linen, came and it was an abundance of linen. And they didn't know where we're going to put all this, where they're going to store all this flax, all this linen. So they said to the blacksmith said, or they said to the blacksmith, they asked, the blacksmith was wondering, where are we going to put all this linen? So he said, with one spark of your fire, you can burn down all the flax. Because it catches fire very easily. So the same thing, when Yaakov heard all of Esau's chiefs and all these powerful kings, Yaakov Avinu said, oh, what are we going to do with all these guys? So Hashem said to him, don't worry, in a second you can get rid of them all. Okay, so Rashi, the Pasuk says, Vayeshev Yaakov Beretz Megurei Aviv, that Yaakov wanted to settle down in the land of his father, Be'eretz Canaan, in the land of Canaan. And as Rashi says, that Yaakov Avinu wanted to live in peace. He thought already enough problems. He finished with Esav, he finished with love, and he finished with all the problems. He wanted to have peace. So Hashem said to him, it's not enough that you want peace in the world to come, you want peace in this world? No, you're not going to have peace in this world. So immediately he got the story with Yosef, that Yosef was sold as a slave.
May I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So how come Yitzchak has an easy life in this life?
How do you know he had an easy life?
Because they say the 2,000 years that corresponds to Yitzchak.
If anything, the Golus of Egypt began with the birth of Yitzchak. Yitzchak had a son, Esav. How peaceful could it be already? Yitzchak didn't have a peaceful life. Hashem says, bring him up to get killed. He almost got killed on the Akedah. What type of easy life did he have? Okay, the Klei Yaakov also discusses over here, and he says, why does he say the land of Megurei Aviv Beretz Canaan? We know Yaakov Avinu, Yitzchak lived in Canaan. The Pasuk should have said that Yaakov settled in the land of Canaan. Why does he say Beretz Megurei Aviv? So the Klei Yaakov explains that Yaakov Avinu realized that he was away from home for 22 years. He was away from home. So he thought, he wanted to emphasize, okay, now I'm going to live at home, Megurei Aviv, to rectify this that he was away from home for so long. And Hashem said to him, it's not enough what you're doing, and Yosef is still going to be missing from you for 22 years. So that's why it says, Be'eretz Megurei Aviv, and also it says, Be'eretz Canaan, that even though Esav was given Har Seir, and Yaakov was given Eretz Yisrael, but as a meanwhile, Megurei Aviv, Gur is a temporary living, not a permanent living. Ger is a stranger, a foreigner. So the Pasuk is telling us that even though Yaakov Avinu was promised Eretz Yisrael eventually, but at the present it was only a temporary dwelling, it wasn't his completely yet. Because the Jewish people, in order to get Eretz Yisrael properly, had to go through a process. They had to go through Golas Mitzrayim, they had to go through the Midbar, through the desert 40 years, there had to be a process for them to merit until they finally get to it. So meanwhile, they were still in a temporary dwelling. Okay, another pasuk says, Ela told us Yaakov. These are the generations of Yaakov. Yosef ben Shva Eser Shonen. This is a simple meaning. These are the offshoots, the children of Yaakov. Yosef, at the age of 17, Hayareya Selchav Batzeni, used to be a shepherd with his brothers and the sheep. Vuhunad, and he was a lad with the sons of Bnei Bilav and his Bnei Zilpa, Neshe Yaviv, the wives of his father. Vayav Yosef is the Basim and all Avim. And Yosef brought the evil tidings of the brothers to Yaakov Avinu. This is the simple meaning of the pasuk. The pasuk says, what's the chronicles of Yaakov? The Yosef was 17, and he was together with the children of Bilhah and Zilpah, and Yosef used to bring the bad tidings. That's the simple meaning. Before we get even into the details of the pasuk, according to Chassidus and Kabbalah, Ela told us Yaakov Yosef, the Medrash also says, that whatever happened to Yaakov, happened to Yosef. Okay? Yaakov and Yosef had a similar life. Yaakov had jealousy of a brother, Esav, problems with the brother. Yosef had problems with his brother. Yaakov was away from home for 22 years. Yosef was away from home for 22 years. Whatever Yaakov Avinu learned, he taught Yosef. Ela told us Yaakov, the offshoot, which also means the learning of Yaakov, he taught to Yosef. Okay, there's a lot of issues over here that have to be discussed. Number one, he quotes over here the Medrash that says, why is Yaakov and Yosef so connected? Why is Yaakov and Yosef so connected? So the answer is very simple. Yaakov wanted to marry Rachel. Leah was given to him by a trick. Bilhah and Zilpah were given to him later. Who did Yaakov really want to marry? He wanted to marry Rachel. So therefore the whole purpose was Yosef, because that's why as soon as Yosef was born, Yaakov said it's time to come home, because he got already what he wanted. That's number one. The Medrash says Yaakov and Yosef looked exactly alike. The facial expressions were the same. Another interpretation is, like we said before, both were hated, both were away from home. There's a lot of issues that happened. What?
I'm sorry, who looked
Yosef and Yaakov looked alike.
But wasn't it that after Abraham and...
Yeah, Abraham and Yitzchak looked alike.
So didn't it happen that after them, no one looked alike anymore?
No. Well, you got a lot of kids that look exactly like the parents.
Abraham
and Yitzchak looked so much alike you couldn't tell who was whom, so Abraham became older.
Right.
But they still looked alike.
Oh, okay.
Now, the truth of the matter is that if Lavan didn't mess things up, Yosef would have been the firstborn. Because if Yaakov married Rachel first, then she would have become pregnant right away. So then Yosef would have been the firstborn. Nevertheless, we find, as the Medrash enumerates, that a lot of things, Yosef ended up in concept as the firstborn. And they say a few things. Number one, Reuben was the firstborn, but Yosef became the firstborn. Because what does the firstborn get double? Yosef ended up with two tribes, Menashe and Ephraim. So Reuben didn't end up with two tribes, Yosef ended up with two tribes. Second thing is Levi. Levi was supposed to be the prophet amongst the brothers. Who ended up as the prophet, as the dream interpreter? Yosef. Yehuda was supposed to be the king. Who ended up being a king in Egypt? Yosef. Yisachar was supposed to be the smart one. And Chacham Vanov and Kamecha, who ended up being the smartest of the boys? Yosef. So that's why it says, Ela told us Yaakov Yosef, that all the qualities that Yaakov had ended up to be by Yosef. Now the Mefarshim explain, Rashi says also the expression that whatever he learned in the yeshiva of, he said whatever he learned in yeshiva of Shem Ve'Ever, he taught to Yosef. It's an interesting thing the Mefarshim discuss, What happened to what he learned from Yitzchak? Yitzchak, I mean, Yaakov left home at 63. Okay? Obviously, Yitzchak taught Yaakov for 63 years. Yitzchak probably knew more Torah than Shemin Aver did. In the yeshiva, Shemin Aver that he went to. So what's the difference? And Bechlau, why did Yaakov go away for 14 years to learn yeshiva Shem Ve'Aver if he was learning 63 years in Yitzchak's yeshiva?
Why Yitzchak know more than Shem Ve'Aver?
Because Yitzchak was greater than Aver was.
Where did he took this knowledge?
Where did Aver get it from? Where did Shem and Aver get the knowledge from?
Adam.
Adam. So wherever they got it, Yitzchak got it better. He got it from Avraham Avinu. I don't know what he did in Gan Eden, but the bottom line is Yitzchak was greater than Shem and Aver. So the Mefarshim learn that what Yaakov really wanted, what the uniqueness of Aver was, is Aver taught him how to exist with Torah in Golus. In other words, Yitzchak was the ultimate level of Kedusha. How to live in Golus. Like the Rebbe said, like we learned before, that before you go out into the world, before he went to Lavan's house, he had to go learn. Right? So that was an accomplishment of Shem Ve'Aver. And that, Yaakov also gave over to Yosef. Because the bottom line was, Yosef had to be a king in Egypt. So what Yaakov learned from Yitzchak, obviously he taught Yosef also. But the main emphasis had to be what Yaakov learned in Shem Ve'Aver. How to live through Golus and be a religious Jew. So that he taught to Yosef. That's the emphasis. Yeah.
What do you mean Yaakov left when he was 63 years old?
You know when he stole the brachas from Esav and then the Esav wanted to kill him, he ran away from home? So he was 63 at the time. He got married at 84. Guys, it's hope. It's hope, guys. Yaakov got married at 84.
How many years did he live?
147. Yeah, but he had four wives, don't forget. He made up lost time.
Time span was
exactly 24 hours a day, 60 minutes, 60 seconds per minute. That's it.
It was a long time ago.
Okay.
Before my boy. Before my boy.
Okay, now, Yosef, by the way, was 17 years old, and this is how we learn, by the way, that Yosef was away from home for 22 years. Because And this is the way the Torah works. The Torah tells us an age at a certain time, and there's another reason also why the Torah does it, but the Torah tells us a certain age because by figuring out the age at this time, we figure out a lot of other things. Yosef was 17 years old when this story happened, when he was sold as a slave. Yosef, when he stood before Potiphar, the Pasuk says he was 30 years old. That's 13 years. From 17 to 30 is 13. Then there's 7 years of plenty. It's 37. I'm sorry, 27. And that, not 27.
47.
No.
43. 13 plus 7 is 20.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Plus 2 more years of famine until Yaakov came down. So that's 22. That's how we figure out that Yosef was away from home for 22 years. Okay? Now, how long was this after Yaakov came back home? 9 years. That means Yaakov came home when Yosef was 8. He was 8 years old. They lived peacefully for 9 years at home. And then when Yosef was 17, 9 years after Yaakov came back home to his father, that's when this whole incident happened, that he was sold as a slave. Yitzchak lived another 12 years after Yosef was sold. So Yitzchak was all alive during this period of time. Okay? Now, what happened over here was, Yosef was 17 years old. Now, okay, we'll leave that for later. Now, what did Yosef do? Yosef was a shepherd together with his brothers. But it's an interesting thing. It says, Hayoreis Echov Batzein. He was a shepherd with his brothers in the sheep. So the Mefarshim explain that Yosef was only with his brothers when he worked with the sheep. That means they had a working relationship. Outside work, Yosef did not hang around his brothers from Leah. Who did he hang around with? Not as B'nai Vilav, as B'nai Zilpah. He was a lad, okay, associating himself with Bilhah's children and Zilpah's children, who were Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. These were the children that Yosef used to hang around with. Why? Huh? No, he was half-brothers. Okay, so why did he hang around with them? So Rashi says, because Leah's children always made fun of them. What do you mean they made fun of them? The Leah's children, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar, Zvulun, they would say to them, you guys are the kids of the maidservants. You're from the secondary wives. You're not the primary kids. You're not the main kids. And Yosef, Rashi says, was Makad of them. He said no. And that's why the Pasuk interestingly says, there's B'nai Bilav, there's B'nai Zilpah, Nishay Aviv. Even though before the Torah calls them the sons of the maidservants. But here, the Pasuk says, it was Nishay Aviv, the wives, to show that they were equal.
How Shvatim, sons of Leah, can behave in this way?
Huh? They themselves understood that.
What okay.
Huh?
How would they tell the other children that you are children of maids? How they can do this? A big tzaddikim and then everybody is equal. How would they tell this?
No, because we'll soon see as the Mefarshim, when we get into later, how is it possible that Yaakov favored one son over the next? We'll learn an explanation.
This is Yaakov.
So what?
Father,
so what? The brothers said these were B'nai HaShvachis. These are the children of the maidservants. They're not the primary wives. The primary wives are Rachel and Leah. And in fact, the Torah itself before calls them the B'nai HaShvachis.
No,
1 second. So the Mefarshim say, the Rambam learns that after Rachel and Leah died, because both were dead by now, so then they became the primary wives. Then they became the Shei Aviv. In this question, when Leah exactly died. But some people say it was later. But, in fact, the Mefarshim say that this, that Reuven moved the bed out of Bilhah, was only because she was a concubine, only because she was the maidservant. If she would have been a primary wife, he wouldn't have done anything with the bed. So the Shvatim, and even the Mefarshim say, that even the B'nai HaShvachas themselves understood that they were really secondary. And there's a lot of psukim in Tanakh that shows that they felt inferior to the other brothers. So, from one side, Yosef was very friendly with them. Okay? But, now there's an interesting concept. Yovah Yosef is the bosom of Al Avihem. Yosef brought the evil tidings to his father.
I'm sorry, I have another question. But at the end, after the Shvachot was the wife, and every Shvatim was...
This equal?
What? After this, every 12 Shvatim was equal or not?
No. The certain greatnesses that the others had, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Yisachar had, that Don Asher, the Don Naphtali, God and Asher didn't have.
Was it always was a difference between Shvatim?
There was, in many respects, there was a difference. Sure. Okay, so now, Rashi learns, Vayav Yosef is the Basim Ra El Avihem. Whose bad tidings did he give? Leah's kids. Okay? But Yosef used to snitch on Leah's children. And we'll soon see what he snitched. The Ramban learns, no. The Ramban learns, just follow the sequence of the Pasuk, he says. He befriended Bila and Zilpah's kids. Vayava Yasef as Dibasim Ra Laviam, Yasef snitched on Bila and Zilpah's kids. Because that's the sequence of the pasuk that Ramban says. Okay? Because, and he says a very simple thing, and Ramban proves it. Because if Yasef stuck up for Bila and Zilpah's kids, why were they part of the selling? It says that all the brothers hated Yosef, and therefore all the brothers ended up selling him. If Bila's kids and Zilpah's kids were his friends, why should they be angry at him? Why should they be part of the selling? So the Ramban learns that they hated Yosef too, because Yosef snitched on them too. So even though from one side he was friendly with them, he hung around them, but that's why he snitched on them, because he knew the way they were acting.
And he would snitch only Bill and Zilpah's sons or Leah's sons too?
Huh?
In this opinion, he snitched Leah's sons too? Only Bill and Zilpah's
sons? Only Bill and Zilpah's kids.
As why the other brother was...
The other brothers hated him because they were jealous of him.
Also, he snitched on other brothers too.
He snitched on everybody. Well, we're soon going to learn what that means. Now, obviously, the question is, what did he snitch, and how did he snitch, and why did he snitch? What's going on here? So Rashi says that there's three things. That they ate eivim min achai, they ate a live limb off an animal. Secondly was that they committed adultery. And also that they called the other kids slaves. Yosef came home to the father. Listen. Yosef came home. It's the pasuk says he snitched. And Rashi said, what did he snitch? He said to Yaakov that you know what your sons are doing? They're eating live limbs off an animal, which is forbidden even for a goy. Secondly, they're committing adultery. Third thing is that there's calling the other children slaves. The Bill and Zilpah's kids are calling slaves. And Rashi says, as we'll see, he was punished for all three. The question is, number one, how could you say that they ate Eivim and Achai? How can you say that he snitched? How can you say that he committed adultery? I mean, how can you reconcile all these things that he did? So what really went on is as follows. The brothers and Yosef were all tzaddikim. And this is a premise that we got to keep in our thick heads. That Yosef was a tzaddik, the brothers were tzaddikim, they're all great people. Their faults are not our faults. What went on is as follows. There's a din in the Gemara that if you shecht an animal, if you ever go to Kaparis and you see the way they shecht the chicken, so the chicken after shechted moves around with spasms for a short period of time. If you ever see when they do it to a cow, the cow moves around for a few minutes. Okay? The Gemara says, nowadays it's forbidden for other reasons, but the Gemara says that once you shech the animal, you're allowed to rip a limb off the animal and prepare it to eat. Because even though the animal is moving around, the animal is still halachically dead. Whether it applies to goyim or not is questionable in the Gemara. Because one of the seven mitzvahs for a goy is eivim min achai. He can't eat a live limb off an animal. So now the question is, by a Jew, the Gemara says for sure, there's no question, that you're allowed to eat the limb off the animal. Obviously you have to salt it, you have to kosher it, but it's still, you're allowed to rip the limb off the animal after the animal is slaughtered, even though the animal still has the spasms and is still moving around. Here are a few ways of learning. Either Yosef maintained that the brothers had a din of a goy. What were the brothers doing? You have to understand, this is very fresh meat. You can't get fresher meat than ripping the limb off the animal when it's just shechted. So, and the Gemara says it's healthy, whatever, because it's fresh or whatever. So the brothers ripped the limb of the animal right after the shechita. Yosef maintained that because before Matan Torah they had a din of goyim, and a goy is not allowed to eat that type of a meat, so So Yosef maintained that you're not allowed to eat that type of meat. It's still Eivim and Achai. The brothers maintained that no, they shechted the animal. They are allowed to eat it. So not that the brothers didn't, halachically the brothers were right, by the way. But Yosef maintained that they're not allowed to. So Yosef snitched to the father Yaakov that the brothers were eating live limbs off an animal. One second. The second, it's a machlekes in halacha. The second aveda that they said that they were committing adultery. So it says, what were the brothers doing? The brothers were business people, and they were talking to women in business. And Yosef said, it's not proper for the shvatim to talk to women in business, even though they weren't doing anything else but talking to women in business. But Yosef maintained for the brothers on their level, that's considered adultery. And Yosef snitched to Yaakov that okay, that's the basically. Okay, and what happened was.
Rabbi.
1 second. And the other thing is that they refused. What actually occurred was that they were taunted, kids of Bilhah and Zilpah, reminding them that the mothers were only the servants of Rachel and Leah, and they weren't actually things. So therefore, they didn't actually call them slaves. Yosef said they're calling them slaves. Because Yosef maintained, if you call the mother a slave, then they're a slave. Okay? And therefore, the Pasuk says, no, they were attacking the Shei Ovid. They were full-fledged wives. And if they're full-fledged wives, then the kids are not slaves. Because they were freed. Rachel and Leah freed Bilhah and Zilpah before they married Yaakov. But the brothers said, your mothers were maidservants. So therefore, the implication was that the kids were slaves. So Yosef said to Yaakov that this is what the kids are saying. Okay? But really, it wasn't true. That's why later, when Yosef came to them, and they wanted to kill Yosef, they maintained that logically Yosef was to be killed. Because the din is, and if you learn Rambam these days, tomorrow's Rambam already, in the three Parakim, the Rambam says that a snitcher, a masur, you're allowed to kill. And over here, Yosef had a din of a masur of lies. Because he was telling Yaakov the brothers were sinning when they really weren't sinning. It was just that Yosef thought they were sinning. So therefore, Yosef had a din of a masur, of a snitcher. And a din is a snitcher, you're allowed to kill. Not only you're allowed to kill, it's a mitzvah to kill him. So the brothers had no choice. Huh?
So everybody can judge he's a snitcher.
No, they established a beis din.
Oh, okay.
No, they did. It says in the Medrash, they made a Beis Din. Huh?
If they are the Beis Din, how could they be subjective?
Obviously, they're able to be subjective.
No,
I'm sorry. They're able to be objective. You're right.
They are.
Right. They're able to be objective. Correct. So this is exactly what went on, and Yosef did it actually, debossim it all, and to their father, in fact, there's an interesting in fact he quotes the Kliyaka quotes a medrash that before Yosef came to the brothers they let wild dogs go to Yosef to kill him. Because the Gemara says call him a saper Lashon Hara. The Gemara says if you speak Lashon Hara you're like a dog. And that's why they wanted the dogs to eat him. To pay him back when he snitched that they were eating live limbs off an animal. But this is the whole story. But it wasn't, God forbid, that Yosef was a snitcher and he was a bad guy. And the brothers, this was an argument in Torah whether something is allowed or not allowed. The brothers maintain it's allowed. Yosef maintained it's not allowed. And Yosef had the right, from his perspective, to snitch to the father because he had an achrayus of admonishing his brothers. And he knew by telling Yaakov this is the only way there was a chance of them to listen. And the brothers maintained that Yosef had a din of a snitcher.
And these dogs didn't touch Yosef?
Huh?
These dogs didn't touch Yosef?
No.
No, the brothers saw that they are not right.
I don't know what happened. But cool, it could be whatever.
And after that they saw that there was in a pit, nobody touched him too. No Akravino, no Hashim, no.
Well, they saw that there was something to him, but they wanted to sell him anyway.
How can it be not be Lashon Hara? It's misrepresenting the truth, isn't it?
No, but he maintained that was the truth. You're right. The fact was he misrepresented the truth. But Yaitzev thought they were attacking doing something wrong. And if they were doing something wrong, he, as a brother, had a responsibility to make them to help them from stop doing it. So how, they're not going to listen to their younger brother, obviously, as everybody knows. You know, nobody listens to a younger brother. You don't listen to an older one either. But you definitely don't listen to a younger one. At least you have an excuse for a younger one not to listen. So he went to his father.
So technically, if there's a teaching involved, there's no din of Lashon Hara. If there's a teaching to learn from...
If you want to... If there is a danger involved, there's no concept of Lashon Hara, correct. If you know a person is not honest, and somebody asks you if you should go in, or they should go into business with them, and you know the guy is a crook and thief or not honest or whatever, or that you know that when he borrows money he doesn't pay back, so Halacha says there's no Lashon Hara, and you should tell them that the person is dishonest. The same thing with Shaduchim, the same thing as in business. Anytime somebody will be hurt by it, there's no concept of Lashon Hara.
But I mean, speaking, what about just to present a teaching? We're learning something. We're saying...
Are we speaking Lashon Hara about Yosef and the brothers? No.
No,
we're not. The question is, why isn't this... No, it's a good question. Why isn't this Lashon Hara? We're talking about Yosef and the brothers, that they did things wrong.
Because we're learning from it.
Because we're learning. So we're learning it and from it.
So are you allowed to say, this guy's not a good guy, you know, at your dinner table, to learn, to teach your kids not to be like this guy?
If the purpose is for the learning, yes. If the purpose is for the gossip, no.
But it's very embarrassing also for someone to... have done something one time wrong and to take his reputation forever. I mean, where is the concept of tshuva? Let's say, if you have the right to say, well, you know, this person has been dishonest in this occasion, and oh, he had something where he did misbehave. But let's say the guy made tshuva. How could you? It's like somewhere he's going to be staying forever. And it's embarrassing for him after to be part of the community.
There is a way in halacha that if somebody is accepted, for instance, there is a halacha that Rambam says, if somebody, let's say, sold treif meat as kosher, okay? So how does the person get tshuva? How does he do tshuva? He goes to a place where nobody knows him, and he ends up being honest in business to the extent that he loses money by being honest, then you know that he did tshuva. There are certain criteria, but until that criteria happens, no. The person, in the laws of witnesses, if a person committed a sin, he is not a kosher witness until you know for sure he did tshuva. You don't say, maybe the guy did tshuva and therefore he's a kosher witness. Until you know differently, he has an establishment of a liar or a thief or whatever, a ganef or whatever. He has a status until you know he changes it. A person halachically has a status that you know about until you know
that
he changed it.
So he had to do something.
Correct.
Mastery actual to show that he's making sense.
Correct. What?
Isn't it that when you turn over somebody to the Jewish government or whatever, and you turn over the money?
There's a din of masad by Eden, there's a din of masad to Goyim. So because here the Masada was a lie. So it was worse, even though it was to a Jew. So, Yaakov is a Jew, no?
Rabbi.
Yes, sir.
I think what my wife was also trying to say is that a person, there's so much complexity. A person could be decent to many people, and so maybe he had a problem with one person, and because that one person can ruin it. In other words, let's say he's in business, and he does 99 deals perfect and one deal not good. Is he has a din of a guy who doesn't do good deals? Or does he have a din that one deal went sour?
Everybody has this.
In other words, it's very complicated.
That's why we should do the opposite way. 99 crooked deals, one good.
No, you know what I'm saying? This person is very kind.
A guy once told me, he said to me, we're talking about honesty in business. He said, you're nuts. You can't make a living today and be honest. You're crazy. You know what you're talking about?
No, but you know what I'm saying? Whatever, not business, anything. You know,
There is, in Pirkei Avos, there's a Mishnah, Ba'akel Lefirei Vamaisa. It says in Svarim that basically, in Tanya Daltreb also says, Ha'kol lefi reiva maisa. Obviously, every person has good. Every person does bad. Okay? So the question, because a guy does one bad deed, he's bad, even though he did 99 good deeds. So in most aspects, as far as judging a person, the Alter Rebbe says in the adjective name, not the realistic name of a tzaddik and a beinoni and all that, but a tzaddik is basically not the real definition of a tzaddik. A tzaddik is 75% good, 25% bad. Generally speaking, the guy's a good person. Does that mean he doesn't do bad? It doesn't mean he doesn't do bad. Generally speaking, he does good. In dinim of witnesses, if a guy steals once, until he did tshuva on that act of stealing, he's not a kosher witness. That's why, when witnesses get called up to be witnesses under a chuppah, they're supposed to think tshuva before they actually witness the act. It says in Svarim, sometimes the Rav even says to the people, usually it ends up to be a joke, be maharid b'tshuva. So you should think tshuva, because in case you did something wrong, tshuva is in a split second, and you become clean.
It's enough to think tshuva?
Tshuva is in a second.
If you steal something and you think, is it enough?
No, it depends. For what? It depends if your intention is giving it back and not giving. Yes, Beryl.
In the Shpa'ezra, we save the Lebashde of the Digma.
Right.
Do we tie up with the ocean?
No, we don't mean him.
Why don't we mean him?
He was a good guy. And first of all, he's not alive anyway, so what are we davening for?
Well,
we don't mean him. He was a Yaisa was a very holy tzaddik. Okay, now the next pasuk says, because this next pasuk connected to this pasuk. Yisrael, Yisrael, Yaakov in this case, loved Yosef from all of his children. Because simply he was born in his old age. No. And made him this multicolored. Different mefarshim. So that mefarshim then was a long shirt. The interesting Baskin Malatesis learns. It was a bracelet around the wrist. And that's how he learns pasim. That's Kim Batesa says, Sviris pas yodai, around his wrist. Most of the Farshim learn pasim is a multicolored garment. Some people say it was a turban, some people, but whatever it was, he made him a special garment. Now, the next pasuk is going to say the brothers hated him. Now, why did they hate him? So the Mefarshim explained both things happened over here. Number one, because he snitched. But that wouldn't be enough of a reason to hate him with that much passion to kill him. But the second thing is that there was jealousy that Yaakov loved Yosef more than everybody else. So everything combined, the fact that he snitched on them, plus the fact that Yaakov loved him the best, especially when the brothers saw that he was the snitcher, so that really caused him to be jealous. Now the problem with jealousy is, as we're going to learn later, there's an expression from the Rebbe Rashab that sinna machmas kina en la takana. Hatred that comes from jealousy can never be rectified. It's an expression he uses in a maimer. Sinna machmas kina en la takana. Sinna that comes from jealousy, hatred that comes from jealousy, it's very hard to rectify. And Siddhas explains, it's a very simple concept. If I don't like you because you hit me, Okay? So when you stop hitting me, I'm not going to hit you anymore. Because it's the cause and effect, right? I don't like you because you make fun of me. So when you stop making fun of me, I'm not going to hate you anymore, right? Then the reason comes off. There's no reason. Jealousy is so deeply rooted, you can't say, why do you hate him? Jealousy is, why are you jealous? You can't, it's so deeply rooted, it's impossible to rectify. Because jealousy is not a cause that's making it happen. You can't stand the person, and therefore you're jealous of them, and therefore, no matter what happens, you're going to be more jealous of the person. Even if they stop doing the cause to you. And therefore, the kin of the brothers was so great and so unbelievably powerful to the extent that they even ended up doing what they wanted to do to him.
How can you overcome that? If you are for someone, or if you are someone you know, someone is jealous of you and you want to... Is there a way you can overcome it somehow? Or is it just knock him off.
There's nobody... Nobody be jealous of. How do you get... It's a very hard thing to deal with. What basically a person has to do is realize their greatness and their fortune of what they have. Right? And if they realize that they have nothing, they're not inferior to that person, that that person is not much better than them because they also have a lot of things and they have advantages that that person doesn't have and they have greatnesses that that person doesn't have. So slowly you get out of it.
So if you're jealous, and somebody jealous of you?
So you, tell them to, you stop giving them reasons to be jealous.
Right. Well, you can stop it.
There's nothing you could do. Just stay away from the person.
I thought the best reason was the commandment.
Do not covet.
Yeah. What better reason you need than that?
It's easier said than done, no? When somebody buys a brand new car, all of a sudden, whoa, what does that mean? Yeah? Well.
It may not mean anything necessarily. It may mean, okay, you buy this
car. How you stay away from jealous people? They are your relatives.
If you stay...
You understand that they could be jealous of
very, very close relatives.
It's like a mafia story.
He brings down over here a medrash.
Wait, what was your question? What was her question?
How do you stay away from jealous people if they're your family?
Family, yeah, very close family.
Stay away.
Yeah.
That's true. The only way to deal with it is to get away from them. Okay, there's a medrash that says that Yaakov's loving of Yosef caused jealousy amongst the brothers is a prototype of Hashem loving the Jews, making them the chosen nation, that causes the hatred amongst all the nations of the world. Now there is a Gemara, the Gemara says in Shabbos, that a person should never differentiate between one child and the next, because of what Yaakov Avinu did with Yosef, look what happened. That's the Gemara. Here they bring down the Zohar, that it's not true. I mean, according to Kabbalah, the Fadish, there was a concept, he quotes, the Zohar recalls that Hashem himself openly proclaims his affection for Yaakov and his hatred of Esav, and the three patriarchs did not hesitate to show Avram loved Yitzchak more than Yishmael, Rivka and Yitzchak, even though the pasuk says he loved Esav, but he learning like we learned what the meaning of it is. Yitzchak knew who Yaakov was. There was a certain greatness that the people had emes. They were real. There was no bluff. And if there was a child that, you see it in last week's pasuk, Menashe and Ephraim. The truth is, L'cha'era, if you stop to think for a minute, Menashe should have become very jealous of Ephraim. And the question is, like a secular person asks, didn't he learn a lesson already? Didn't Yaakov learn from Yosef and the brothers what not to do? I mean, you have to understand, if Yaakov put his right hand on Menashe, who's older, and his left hand on Ephraim, nobody would have any complaints. Listen, he's older, he goes first, that's all.
This is what Yosef is telling. What you're doing is
you right, begin right. Again the so, story. So what's going on? Yaakov did it anyway. It's like, who said that? Oh, somebody said, when they learned Vayeshev, they got very angry. And the guy said, you know, I learned this a year ago. Didn't Yosef learn a lesson from last year when they read it, not to start up with the brothers? Didn't he learn a lesson by now? You know, that's the bottom line. Yaakov with Emes. If there was an advantage of Ephraim, and Yaakov said clearly, Menashe is going to be great. Menashe is great, but Ephraim is going to be greater. And the reason why Yaakov had this unique relationship with Yosef, because Taki Yosef was greater. And he says, this whole thing of moral perfection, whatever it is. And there has to be the halacha, all jealousy is bad. But kinah sofrim tarva chochma. Jealousy of good deeds or of knowledge, if you're jealous of somebody who does better, so then it adds knowledge. Okay? Jealousy in a good way is good. Why do they have competitions and, you know, some kids do? There's a whole debate in modern education. It's a very interesting debate. Years ago, they had a valedictorian and a salutatorian. Today, they don't even know what those things exist anymore. At a graduation, the valedictorian was the brightest kid in the class. The kid with the best grades made a speech. And then he was the number one, called the valedictorian. And then the salutatorian was number two. So they had the best kid in the class, you know, the best student of the class, making the speech. And that basically crowned him as the best student in the class. In today's modern day education, they say you can't do that. You can't do that anymore. Why can't you do it anymore? Because it's causing jealousy among the students, and it's not right, you can't do this, you can't. Or in many schools they have, in the school they have Talmud HaShavua, right? Talmud HaShavua, Talmid HaShavua, you know. Oh, well, hey, somebody could say, well, you know, you make it jealousy, the other kids are going to be jealous. Let them be jealous. Let them be jealous. Because if the jealousy is in a good nature, that you're jealous of somebody doing better than you, then you'll also strive to be better. So, by the others who saw Emes, and they saw the thing the way it really was, Yosef had a greatness that the other brothers didn't have. Ephraim had a greatness that Manasseh, and therefore you can't say, didn't Yaakov learn from his mistakes? In Yaakov, it wasn't a mistake. This that he loved Yosef, Yaakov knew exactly what he was doing, and there was a greatness to it, the Zohar says. Because Yosef was stuck a greater. And if Yosef is greater, Yaakov had a special relationship with him. I, the other brothers are jealous. Let him be like him. And the same thing, that's why he did the same thing with Menashe and Ephraim. Yeah.
Before Matan Torah, was it jealous between Jewish and not Jewish people? Because it's written in Har Sinai, because Sinai are done on them.
Listen, whatchamacallit? Esav hated Yaakov before Matan Torah.
That's why it said Sinai,
to the whole, all the nations. But Esav saying that Yaakov was existing from day one. That everybody hated Avraham was existing from day one. Yeah?
Did you say that Esav had for Yaakov?
For
Yaakov? He was born with it. There was no reason to be jealous of Yaakov. Yaakov was calm. He was sitting in Ohel studying. So that's in anti-Semitism, that hate, it was born with Esau.
Yeah, but when he stole the brachas, it really escalated. It really escalated. Because then he had something tangible to grab onto. Like this, the jealousy and the hatred was, that the hatred was there. Okay? The hatred was there from day one. But he had nothing to tap it on, like they say in Yiddish, on top, and there's nothing to grab onto it with. Mm-hmm. And that was...
One more question. Kind of, it's not related to what study you do now. When you pray for Abraham, you say, you know, aren't we praying also for Muslims?
No.
In a way, because they're also
children of Abraham. You know, when we pray in our prayers...
It's not true. According to the Torah, Kebi Yitzchak Yikari L'Chazara, that the children of Abraham are only Yitzchak's children. That's what the Torah says. Yeah, he was the father of all nations of the world. Abba Mangoyim, he was the father of all nations. And that's why a convert is allowed to daven on the Kei Avram. Why? Because Avram was a God, a father of all nations. But as far as Avram's direct biological children, is only Yitzchak Yikari Chazara, not Yishmol. Yishmol does not have a din.
Why does he want to get all these goodies because of the Brit Milah that Ishmael did, Abraham did for Ishmael, so...
What do they get?
You know, they say that they have Israel for the Zakud of certain, the Brit Milah that he did, and...
That doesn't mean they're Avram's biological children.
But they get...
Are they Jewish?
They are children.
Are they Jewish?
No.
Why not?
They are.
No, I'm saying, according to you, they should be Jewish.
No, I'm just saying that...
Because they're not Avram's children. They're not Avram's children. Okay, so now...
In this time, the Jewishness was after the father, not after the mother, yeah?
Before Martin, there are certain opinions that way. Okay, now... it's an interesting thing. When the Pasuk says, in Pasuk Beis, V'hu Nar, okay, he was a kid. Okay, what does it mean, Nar? So Rashi says, he acted like a child. He would comb his hair, and he would act like a child. So the question is, why did Yaakov love him so much? So this interesting thing, the Klal Yakov says, he was, when he was with B'nai Bilam, B'nai Zilpa, then he was a nod. When he was with Yaakov, it says, Ki ben skunim hulei. Then he acted like an old, mature person. Yosef knew how to deal with wherever he was, he knew how to deal with it at that time. When he was with B'nai Bilam, B'nai Zilpa, he was a nod. When he was with Yaakov, the Klal Yakov says, when he was with Yaakov, he was Ben Skunim.
What's a nod?
A lad, like a kid. Here, with all the Yaakov, he should be Yaakov. Actually, he must not get out of Kizaki and Virogel.
Who writes this?
Klal Yakov. Okay, now, Vayiru Echov, okay, the brothers saw, Ki Eisei Ohav Aviyah Mikol Echov, that the brothers, that Yaakov loved Yosef more than all the other brothers, Vayisno Eisei, and they hated him, V'lo Yochlu Dabri L'Sholim, and they were not able to speak to him peaceably. They were able to not to speak decent with them. So, the Abarbanel learns, what does it mean, Layochlu Dabre L'Sholim, that when Yosef asked the brothers, how are you, they didn't answer him. Layochlu Dabre L'Sholim, that when he asked them Sholim, how are you, Layochlu L'Dabre, they didn't speak to him about Sholim. When he asked, how are you doing, they ignored him. But there's another thing which is probably a very important lesson, and Rashi says, from their faults you see their greatnesses. They couldn't speak to him peaceably. If they hated him, they weren't politicians that bluffed it, that they were able to speak to him nicely. They were real. They were emes. They were not what's called echad bepeh v'echad belev, one way in the heart and one way in your mouth. If you didn't like somebody, They were open about it. And the Torah considers this a big advantage. Because otherwise you're a complete bluffer. And in Torah, there's a unique concept called emes, truth.
If I don't like somebody, I have to...
No, you don't have to tell him that you hate him. There's a Yiddish expression, a ligen tamen zogen, aber dem ist auf nechen zogen, which means, you're not allowed to say a lie, that doesn't mean you always have to say the truth.
Somebody tell you hello, you don't answer him?
No, that doesn't mean that. The brothers didn't. No, there's two different things. The brothers didn't answer him. But if somebody that there's no problem, giving the truth. They were honest, they didn't like him in their heart, they didn't like him openly. They were clear, You see the position.
This is not example for us.
The Gemara says, Yani HaMelech told his wife, Yani HaMelech told his wife, don't be afraid of the Rishoyim. You have to be afraid of the people that do the act of Zimri, and they want reward like Pinchas. Mm-hmm. Meaning, the people that sin, but they make themselves super religious like they're Pinchas. He says, those are the guys you have to be careful about. Mm-hmm. When you know with somebody where you're at with them, even if you know it's no good, but at least you know where you're at with them, it's good. When you don't know where you're at with the person, that is very dangerous. And that's what the Torah is teaching us, by the way, a lesson over here. And we're not finished yet with the puzzle, but the brothers were real. You knew exactly, Yosef knew exactly where he was with them. You don't know if somebody's your friend, or you don't know if he's not your friend. It's a very, very dangerous position to be in. Because that's complete lack of emes. And you see this really, we said this many times, it's a phenomenal sikh of the Rebbe. When Eliyahu and Har HaKarmel, there were 400 Goyish prophets, and Eliyahu HaNavi was the only Jewish prophet left. And he comes to them to prove who's the real God. So what is it? It's the Haftarah of Kisisa. What does Eliyahu HaNavi say to the people? How, for how much longer are you going to be on the threshold? Like, nishtahin, nishtahin, neither here nor there. And Eliyahu HaNavi said to them, Im Hashem l'chu acharav, if God is the real God, go after him. Im Abal, if it's the idols, go after him. It's a question, how is Eliyahu HaNavi saying such a statement? Eliyahu HaNavi should say, go after God. Eliyahu HaNavi is saying to them a different concept. He's saying, why are you Jews in the middle, neither here nor there? Make up your mind. If you want to go to the idols, go to the idols. You don't want to, you want to go to God, go to God. How does the prophet say that? So the Rebbe explains in the Sicha, being in the middle, neither here nor there, is worse than going to idols. It's worse than going to idols. Why? This is another question in education. It's getting late. It's late already.
We have 4 minutes.
Because we started 4 minutes
sure.
late. But we always start 4 minutes late. You're allowed to start late, you're not allowed to finish late. Yeah, it's overtime. There's a question in education. If somebody lives in a city where there's no frum day school, no frum yeshiva, and there's either two choices, public school, or, I'm not using any names, compromised Jewish school. Compromised Jewish school. I don't want to say it. And obviously for a reason I don't want to say it. Or compromised Jewish school. Is it better? And you could, that's what the two choices, that's it. There's nothing else to go to. Should somebody go to a public school? Or should they go to compromised Jewish school? The Rebbe's shita was to go to public school. Why? It's a very simple reason. When you're in public school, you know this is not Yiddishkeit. That's it. You know what it is. You know exactly clear that this is not Yiddishkeit. You want Yiddishkeit, you go to a yeshiva, you'll learn Yiddishkeit. But right now where you are, it's not Yiddishkeit. To learn compromised Yiddishkeit, you're in the middle, neither here nor there. And that's the Rebbe's shita. Public school is better than a compromised religious school. Because standing in the middle, neither here nor there, is the worst. Because there's no emes there. You know, it's like Avram's brother, Haran, said, well, if Avram gets saved from the fire, I'll go with him. He wants him, I'll go with him. I mean, you know, you're nowhere. So the Torah is teaching, again, we didn't finish this, but next week, and we'll continue the passing. But Avram, I mean, the Torah is teaching us the greatness of the brothers that were emes. You know exactly where you were with